Alan Mendenhall, the Federalist Society. What else is Alan? He is the chair at Faulkner University of the Burke Society, I want to say, amongst many other titles, and a Southern gentleman to boot. Hey, Alan, it's been far too long. Glad you had the time to spend with us here on the Mike Church Show on the Crusade Channel, the last live radio station standing, always online and always on air at crusadechannel.com. How are you, brother?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on, Mike.
Oh, my pleasure, my pleasure. Now, I have the right Alan Mendenhall. We met at Abbeville in 2010, right?
It was about that time. It's been a while. But yes, I'm the right one.
I told Mrs. Chur, I said, Mendenhall was the one that who you liked. You said he looked like he was 15. Where, why is a 15-year-old giving the next talk? But then you gave this talk about, I want to say it was about Oliver Wendell Holmes. Do you remember?
That's correct. It was.
And was it about a bio or something? I want to say that his son had written, or someone had written in, was it your take then that Oliver Wendell Holmes was like one of the last Jeffersonian, true Jeffersonian jurists that we ever had?
Well, there's an argument to be made to that end, but I was focusing specifically on his service in the 20th Massachusetts, which contained several copperheads in that unit. So it was an interesting unit insofar as you had these Union soldiers who sympathized with the South but were nevertheless fighting for the North. And so it's an interesting situation to look at, especially for those who suggest that the Union soldiers were maybe fighting for some particular cause like emancipation or something like that. This really throws a wrench in that narrative. And in particular, one of Holmes's comrades in arms was very, very opposed to the Emancipation Proclamation, and his father was actually involved in a march in Boston against the Emancipation Proclamation. So looking at the history of that unit actually gives you all kinds of new perspectives on the Civil War, or the war between the states.
Or, as I call it, the War of Northern Aggression.
That's another term for it.
It was a great conference because you spoke, and I want to say that we got kicked off with, I'm trying to remember the guy's name, Kent something or other, and he gave this great talk about why Kentucky plays my old Kentucky home at the start of Kentucky football games, something that most people in Kentucky probably don't even know. And it was a great, great session. I wish Don would have recorded it. Maybe he did, because people would really benefit from this. You know, Brian McClanahan also gave the talk on, who is the senator, the senator and son from Delaware? Is it Byers?
I'm not entirely sure, Mike.
It's in Forgotten Conservatives in American History, a book that Brian wrote with Clyde Wilson. It was great.
Right.
Yeah, it was a great conference. And there we were in the shadow of evil granite racism, Alan. Stone Mountain.
Stone Mountain, that's right.
Now, if you've never been to Stone Mountain, folks, you just can't. It is impossible to describe this thing without having actually stood underneath of it.
It's a magnificent thing. I mean, it's a gigantic rock that just ascends upwards into the heavens, and you think, how did this thing even get here? It's a pretty amazing thing to behold.
Now, I want to talk today a little bit about this this essay that you wrote at Lou Rockwell. Was this published at Abbeville Institute as well?
Well, it was published originally at Mises Wire, which is at Mises.org, by the Mises Institute, and then Abbeville ran it, and then LouRockwell.com ran it. And it's generated a lot of attention, and this is about the third show I've done in the last couple of days on it. So it's gaining some attention.
Well, that's good, because it's an important subject. Because as I mentioned, there are people that are now becoming apprised of this thing, this heinous, mortally sinful error, this abomination called porno grind music. One of the things that's involved, that this nutbag was involved in, that murdered all these people in Dayton, Ohio. And I was making the case that, well, prior to, I think it's Westboro Baptist versus Lawrenceville. Am I right? Is that the case?
That's probably it. I don't know exactly what you're about to say to know for sure, but
okay. So it's the case where the small towns of Lawrenceville and another town in Kansas passed ordinances where they said the nuts at Westboro Baptist can't get within 1,000 yards of a funeral procession with their signs, and anyone that has anything derogatory to say can't say it at a funeral in these towns. Now, before incorporation doctrine, Lawrenceville, Kansas is perfectly within it, even after the incorporation doctrine, perfectly within its rights to say that we think this is obscene, it's obnoxious, it is an affront to public decency. You can't do it here, and you can't claim free speech to do it. So they passed laws saying that the Westboro Baptist Church nutbags couldn't do it there. Well, of course, the ACLU takes the thing all the way to the Supreme Court, and Antonin Scalia writes for the court that Westboro Baptist, under the First Amendment, has the right to do the most obscene, abominable things at the funerals of anyone that they want because the cars are driving on public land. So now you know the case?
Yeah, I think, is it Snyder v. Phelps? Is that the one?
It is Snyder v. Phelps because he would have been the AG of Kansas at the time.
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure, but I know the case you're referring to.
Okay, so because we live in Blobistan and not in a federal union of states, if someone wanted to ban porno grind music, they can't do it anymore, right?
Well, it sounds like no, and I don't really know what porno grind music is, to be honest with you, Mike.
You're not missing anything.
I don't think that would be. I mean, if it is what I think it is, which is just a form of dance that maybe young people are doing or something like that, then no, I don't think you could ban that. But calling it speech is also extremely problematic.
Well, everything is speech now, don't you know? Nudity is speech. public acts of fornication are now speech. People wearing costumes to make other people think that they're dogs is now speech. But let's get to the meat and taters of the United States is not a nation. You know how many times? Well, you do know how many times I've said this. Like I give the explanation that Don Livingston gives that if there's a country club. And there's an association of country clubs that get together, and so they can buy some filet mignon cheaper than they would if they bought it on their own, and they form an association of country clubs. They're not a country club.
that's right. Well, I think what the root of the issue is people calling the United States of America a nation.
Thank you.
And I take a nation to be a community of people, not a state, not a government, but a community of people bound together by a shared culture, language, history, customs, traditions, mores, values. And yes, it does have a political character to it insofar as the members of that community seek to advance the interests of that community, but it is not the same thing as a country. Or I think part of the reason why there's some confusion is that we now live in the era of the nation state, but we didn't always have nation states. So people conflate the nation and the state, but the United States of America is not a nation as that term was historically understood.
Now, you mentioned that there was a... I know the name, so I know you're talking about the American Conservative Magazine had a conference... Tucker Carlson, Peter Thiel, J.D. Vance, John Bolton, Michael Anton, Rich Lowry, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And they're going to have a conversation about national conservatism. Now, when I saw the story, I went, there's no such thing as national conservatism, guys. That doesn't exist. And, of course, 5 days later, this came out. What form of conservatism, then, is there that... We should be directing our efforts towards.
Well, I mean, I think that the traditionalist conservatism is a decentralized form of conservatism. I mean, if you look at the family as the basic unit of society and immediate communities, you know, within sort of concentric spheres coming out from the family, I mean, that's a sort of traditionalist form of conservatism. It is local in concern. It is not obsessed with bigness or greatness, but it's obsessed is not the right word, but it's concerned with, you know, values and morals and civility and peace. I think it's important to emphasize peace because these nations, as they were traditionally understood, were, you know, they consisted of kind of homogenous cultures and communities in part because those would facilitate cooperation and peace and civility and not sort of a bellicose nationalism, which is militaristic. I mean, when you see John Bolton as one of the headliners at that conference, you got to immediately think, hold on a second, something's not right here. Now, there are a lot of great people that were speaking at that conference, and a conservative nationalism, to me, is going to be a flawed project from the start because you can't have nationalism based around the United States of America because the United States of America is the enemy of nationalism. The United States of America has stamped out nationalism and tried to eliminate regional distinctions and tried to insist on some kind of coerced uniformity. And that is in opposition to nationalism. You can't build a project of nationalism around something that does that. That's more of an empire.
Right. Well, we are part of the American empire. And put another way, when John Baumann and Bolton shows up at one of these conferences, you might subtitle it, we are now a justified target for a actual act of just war for someone else to carry out. Alan Mendenhall is an author. He is a member of the Federalist Society. He's on the Dude Maker hotline with us. Long time since we talked to Alan. By the by, how come Andy McCarthy gets all the props on Fox News and you don't get any? You're far better looking than he is.
Well, thanks. I was going to say probably because he looks better than I do.
No. Let me ask you a question off the subject, and I'm going to quote someone that no one in the chat room is going to know, or no one listening is going to know, but you'll know immediately because you wrote about it in a piece. What is the Federalist Society, and you're probably one of the more conservative members of the Federalist Society, but the Federalist Society has come a long way since it was conceived, came about in the 1970s. With the election now of Trump, and then you've got Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh on the Supreme Court, is there any hope that, say, Casey versus Planned Parenthood might actually be, because I don't think Roe is ever going to be revisited. To me, the linchpin of the whole damn thing right now is Casey. Because if you can get Casey,
exactly right.
Am I right? See, I'm not a lawyer and I'm right. If you get Casey overturned, what happens then, Alan?
Well, I mean, then you're going back. I mean, you potentially given the state the right to do some of this. Kind of anti-abortion legislation you've seen, some of the pro-life legislation is going to stand. You undo, I mean, basically, you're undoing the holding it's going to have to go back, but the 14th Amendment was used in Casey to say that the restrictions in I believe it was Pennsylvania, created an undue burden on married women who are seeking abortion. So what you're doing is you're saying these restrictions that the states are passing, for example, Alabama just passed one, would no longer, you know, you wouldn't call those an undue burden, and you would allow the states to be more restrictive on their abortion law.
Well, do the people in the Federalist Society have any hope that this might actually happen? Or do we still need for Darth Vader Ginsburg to finally kick the bucket and for Trump to get another one?
Well, I think that would, I think that would help. I mean, if the rumors are true that Amy Coney Barrett would be the choice under a Trump presidency if Ginsburg vacancy were to occur, then I think you would see Casey being overturned. I truly do.
So you agree with me that Casey is the linchpin. Roe would be, you want Roe overturned, but really the implementation that these monsters have used is, and when you think about these circumstances, Alan, Bob Casey was a Democrat governor of Pennsylvania, but he was a Roman Catholic, and he was very pro-life, and he very piously signed that bill restricting abortion in Pennsylvania. And, you know, they basically kicked him out of the Democrat Party, and then that case goes to the Supreme Court. And, of course, Anthony Kennedy famously puts the plunges the dagger into the back of the pro-life movement and pretty much kills any action that the states can have. It really is. It's one of the most heinous acts. People always say Roe. Okay, well, Roe is bad. To me, Casey's even worse.
It is. Now, the one opening that Casey leaves you is it has some discussion about advancements in medical tech, that it's possible that you could, if it were to be proven that a fetus is viable at whatever stage, that we would have to revisit this opinion. So it actually invites a future litigant to challenge it. So there is a possibility that people can follow that prompt. I mean, I think that the justices writing at the time realized that what they were writing probably wasn't going to be etched in stone forever and always. Okay. So they wanted to give themselves a way to back out. I think it was, O'Connor and Kennedy and Souter that were the plurality in that case.
I think so. That sounds about right. So the United States is not a nation. Alan Mendenhall on the Dudemaker Hotline with us. Let me read this to you, folks. Now, I'm looking at my bookcase, and I can stare, and I can see right across the way there a book with a powder blue paperback cover with a black spine. I actually bought it at the Abbeville Conference, and it's written by the guy that said this. So you wrote this. The difference between a country and a nation. Why? Because the United States is not and never has been a nation. The founding generation referred the United States as a plural noun. That is, these United States. Because several sovereigns fell under that designation. St. George Tucker called the United States a federal compact consisting of several sovereign and independent states. If his view seems unrecognizable today, it is because nationalism within the United States is dying or dead, and the United States killed it. You quote St. George Tucker. First of all, who is that guy?
Well, that is a great question. So St. George Tucker was an American jurist, and so you could argue that there are two visions for America, first of all, the Hamiltonian versus the Jeffersonian.
Sure.
So the Hamiltonian is nationalist, calling for centralized power, favoring an industrial, mercantilist society that's characterized by banking and commercialism, a robust military. But the Jeffersonian vision is more leisurely and agrarian. It favors political decentralization and popular sovereignty and local republicanism. So, first of all, you would say St. George Tucker is in the Jeffersonian category. But he was born in Bermuda but came of Virginia. He studied at William & Mary under George White, and he eventually became a law professor there. But he was a lot of things. He was a poet, he was an essayist, he was a judge, but he was an expositor of the compact theory of the states, which is something that Don Livingston, whom you mentioned earlier, also adheres to.
Now, I have the book. I have the book.
Yeah. View of the Constitution of the United States. There's a Liberty Fund edition in 1999.
I have it.
Yeah.
St. George Tucker, forward by Clyde N. Wilson. I'm showing it to the to the TV audience. Just to prove, now look, am I a Federalist or what? Look at all the tabs in that book. So I'm looking at all my tabs going, and I love this book. Section 13. The dissolution of these systems happens when all the Confederates, by mutual consent or something. Look, I'm not going to quote from it. If you want to know why some of us insist that I live in the nation of Louisiana, get this book right here. Alan lives in the nation of Alabama. Get this book right here. It's one of the better ones in describing, and this guy was writing, he was a contemporary of James Madison. He was a contemporary of Thomas Jefferson. He's one of these founding father guys you never hear about. You know, it's kind of interesting, though, that St. George Tucker, you said he's from Bermuda. Well, isn't Hamilton from Nevis?
Yeah, Hamilton is an immigrant, too. Hamilton was just, you know, he was an interesting case. I think Hamilton had sort of a complex about his origins and was always trying to, I'm no psychoanalyst or anything, but I think he was always trying to deal with what he perceived as his own inadequacies. And it led him to be, you know, to try to favor this massive, powerful central government and a big standing army and all these different things that he was trying to maybe, you know, compensate for his own inadequacies or something.
Well, you're getting deep into the skull of Hamilton. You know, if you want to get into the skull of Hamilton, one of the better biographies, I know that Henry Cabot Lodge wrote like an 8-volume set because he was obsessed with Hamilton. Well, one of the better modern biographies actually written by someone that you may think is a good or you may not think is a good author or a good representative of a conservative. But Richard Brookhiser wrote one called Alexander Hamilton, Marrakin. And it's pretty easy read. I think it does a really good job of painting a picture of who this Hamilton guy was. And you read a biography of Alexander Hamilton, and you come to find out, Alan, he's a very complicated dude. I mean,
yeah, and I have not read that book, but I did read Brookhiser's recent biography on John Marshall, who is also a complicated dude.
Yes, yes. But you find out that Hamilton, for example, in my movie, The Times That Try Men Sold, we learn that 2 17-year-olds were at the Battle of Trenton. One became president. One was killed by Aaron Burr. The one that became president got shot that day. His name was James Monroe. The one that got shot again by Burr was manning an artillery at Trenton. His name was Hamilton. You know, that's one of the reasons why I think part of the American Revolution story endures, because there are so many great stories in it like that. A pair of 17-year-olds, you know, Hamilton and Monroe. And few people know that story. But it's one of the stories that I like to read. But let's get back to the question. Nation versus country. Now, people like men like Don Livingston have been arguing this since they've been able to argue. You and I are just getting, just dipping our toe in this pond. Do you see any movement back towards people understanding or maybe even desiring the concept of, you know what, I don't want to, I'm not an American, I'm an Alabamian, I'm a Virginian, I'm a North Carolinian first, and then I'm an American, which is to me is the correct order. Do you see any movement back towards this?
Well, I think in the Southern states, there's such a stigma behind it, and everyone's so fearful of being labeled that there's not going to be if there is a movement, it's not going to begin here. But I think you're seeing things in California that Marcus Evans has this Cal exit movement.
Yep.
And there was almost a referendum over in California about breaking up that state. So I think if you're going to see it, you're going to see it in places like that, or Vermont, or the Free Staters in New Hampshire, or something like that. Or even Hawaii and Alaska. I mean, why would any native Hawaiian want to be part of the United States? I mean, what do they have in common with people in Vermont or South Carolina or Nebraska? I mean, they're completely culturally distinct. You may see some of these movements towards self-determination in places like that. And if it were to catch on, then, you know, then it might catch on. Then you might get Texas. The short answer is I don't know, but I think it's completely unrealistic to think that, say, 500 years from now, the borders of the United States of America are going to look exactly the same as they do now. I mean, we know that all countries, all borders do get redrawn over time for different reasons. And I think the focus needs to be on, okay, well, since this is an inevitability, how do we accomplish this peacefully without resort to war, because so many times over the course of history, when there are separatist movements or when a country becomes divided, you get war. And I think if we start actually bringing concepts like secession to the table, that reasonable people of good faith can talk about it and potentially set the stage for a peaceful transition in the future rather than something that would ever involve warfare.
Well, I think that one of the best issues that we have right now for countries, states as countries versus one nation under God, is this claptrap of this ridiculous loyalty oath that people want to stand and recite the Pledge of Allegiance and all that. It's immigration, ironically. Why should the state of Louisiana have to abide by laws that it knows are not conducive to raising the next great generation to make Acadiana great again? I'm just kidding. Acadiana is where the Cajuns are, right?
Yeah, and why couldn't Louisiana enforce its own borders rather than having to depend on the federal government, which then refuses to do it?
Thank you, Mr. Mendenhall. This is an issue, though, Alan. I think everyone that we're talking about understands. And I don't think that your average Southerner, he may be gun-shy about going, well, I ain't going to say the S-word, secede, you know, because they'll call me a Klan member. They're going to call you a Klan member anyways, Jim Bob. You may as well be proud while they're calling you a Klan member. I think everyone can understand the concept of the border being the border between Alabama and Mississippi. And if Mississippi wants to immigrate all these foreigners, fine. You go ahead and do it. They're not coming into Alabama. I think everyone can understand that, and I think that that's an entry point. What do you think?
Well, I think conceptually, yeah, I agree with you that they can. It's just, you know, with the federal government that has dangled the carrot for so long, even things like, you know, the drinking age being 21 rather than 18. I mean, these are things that were established so that the states had to buy in if they wanted to get federal money. And so many of the states over the course of the 20th century have become so dependent on that federal largesse that a lot of state legislators just don't want to talk about sovereignty in this way because they feel that, you know, they don't want the cash coming in from the Fed. I mean, they don't want to stop the cash flow coming in from the Fed. So, conceptually, I think you're right. I think all this stuff has to emanate from the people themselves and not even from the people's representatives because it's difficult. You know, a lot of people, representatives, even at the state level, aren't representative of the people's prevailing attitudes and beliefs. So the more local you start at the state level, I think the more real these concepts become to people. If it's abstract, if it's something that's happening way over there or way over here, you know, it doesn't tend to be part of their quotidian experience. It doesn't tend to be something that they can relate to. But, you know, the more local you get, the more people tend to understand it, and really feel it.
Well, I don't know if you know this or not, but in 2016, I formed this thing called the Louisiana Independence Party. Of course, this is loosely modeled after the UK, UKIP, right? And the few people that have asked me about it, I tell them it's pretty simple here. And here's what I mean. Basically, why do we need an extra national out of our nation? Why do we need an extra national entity writing rules and laws for us? Are we not capable?